So I think there's a balance to it. And I think it's going at it, like trying to benefit from it in every way you can. So it's benefiting from the influencer's audience, benefiting from their content creation, benefiting from the alignment and the partnership, using their likeness in your own ads, like literally leveraging influencers in every way you can throughout your...
Welcome to a new episode of The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory. But before we get started, I wanted to invite you to follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, whatever you use, so that you can get notified about new episodes with fantastic guests and interesting topics every single Wednesday. Okay? Enjoy the show.
Today with me, we have Erik Huberman, that is the CEO and co-founder of Oak Media. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How are you, first of all?
Doing great. Yeah. You know, new year, having fun. Beautiful out.
Fantastic. Cannot complain, right? You need right. The basics exactly. Sometimes in life just to be happy, and then everyone else is extra, right? So
exactly.
That is the right thing, I would say, right? Especially for entrepreneurs that have like ups and downs and everything, you have to look at things right in that.
Yeah, you definitely right way. Business will go up and down. It's part of the nature, but you can't make that, you can't ride that, wear that on your shoulders all the time.
Absolutely. So usually what I do is that I ask, you know, a bit more in the first minute, right, of who you are. And of course, you know, like I don't want you to, I'm pretty sure that this type of question I've been asked like 1,000 times, but I'm really interested in learning more about when you started and maybe some little nice, interesting stories about starting a company, because you have like from things like, if I'm correct, you, when you register Oak Media, you didn't find it with the Oak, like without the E. So you had to add it in the domain, right? Because that was what was available. So from these little stories to what does it mean to build a company? So first of all, how did you start it? You started quite young. What does it mean now to have a company that grew so much? If I'm correct, it's like, what, the fastest growing consulting agency, right, for marketing in the United States in the past years. So tell me more about how this started. If you always had an entrepreneurial mindset, what happened in the past, like 10 years of your life? And, you know, what are you building now?
I had sold my last company, not for enough to retire, but like was doing fine. I had money in the bank and I didn't want to spend my savings. So I started consulting just to pay the bills, to figure out what I wanted to do next. And I was advising for a bunch of companies. Over the course of 6 months, more and more companies were trying to hire me. I said, hey, I don't want a job, but I can consult. And so I kept building and building this consulting practice of being sort of this fractional outsourced CMO for these companies. And then when it came time for them to execute, I found that it was really hard for them to find marketing talent. Like it was really hard for them to actually execute on the things I was advising on. And so a long story short, I ended up building my own little team to help them and then immediately saw that that worked well. And still to that point, I was planning on starting a tea company. And this was just a means to an end. And once that started to go, I realized like, wow, there is a huge need for great marketing, but in a way that's it's accessible. Like the problem was 99% of marketing firms are not good at what they do. And the few that are good are really expensive, want long contracts, high minimums, and they're just hard to work with. And so that was really the nascence of it. And I found that this was a bigger problem than I even originally anticipated. And I found that I enjoyed it. You know, I liked that I got to jump into different companies and work with different brands and try different tactics and help grow a bunch of companies. And if I did well in growing other companies, it'd grow my company. And I really liked growth. So that's really what started focusing on it and starting to build it out. And then it just took off. Just turned 9 years old. We're 20 plus people, 250 people, something like that. We work with over 4,000 brands at this point. And through that, I got to build a venture fund, software business with Hawk AI, sort of an AI tool, financing arm, you know, wrote a best-selling book. Like the whole path has been fun along the way. And with that, I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, there's tons of nuance. I didn't think those were going to be big. So when I named it, I was sitting in my bed on GoDaddy trying to find a domain name. And when the Hawk without the E was taken, I threw an E on it and went, great, perfect. That's the name of my consultancy. Like, this was not like, I'm building a billion-dollar company. Where do I start? That wasn't how I started this.
And so Erik at, let's say, 10 years old, was already like an entrepreneur in your heart and your mind? Or yeah. Say, so like, do you think that you were like natural into that? And then it was like just a growing thing on you? Since we're in a cathedral, or
natural would be a fair thing to say. Maybe it's genetic, but it was more nurture in the sense of like my dad was an entrepreneur, my grandfather was an entrepreneur. And so as I started, you know, my view of work was always if I'm going to work for someone else, it's to learn something because I'll probably end up building my own company at some point. And it was like, you know, I just took that for granted. Like that's probably what we do. And so that, you know, at 6 years old, I was trying to sell my parents' stuff door to door to make some money because I thought I needed money. At 8 years old, I started buying and selling. It was started with selling flowers and lemonade on the side of the road. And then I started buying and selling Beanie Babies and made a few thousand dollars as an 8-year-old. Like, it was just one thing after another like that. But I always had a knack for business and an interest in it. But I thought it was always to make money to then go, I thought I was going to be a musician and I'd go be a rock star. And so like the buying and selling Beanie Babies was so that I could afford to buy an electric guitar. So it was, that was the original motivation. By about 12, I realized I wasn't a good guitarist and it was fun, but
I wasn't talented. Well,
and that's when I started thinking more business might be my path.
Okay. Do you still play the guitar sometimes, or is like something that is like, you know what?
No, I play all the time. I'm not good enough to be a professional, but I enjoy it.
Nice. I love it. It helps a lot. I also play the piano sometimes. Yes. It's not something that could be like a pro, but creatively speaking and just to free your mind, I like it. And so since like, you know, you started like, you know, quite young and everything, what are your, you would say for yourself, your best skills? Just not in marketing, but also like, you know, anything that you learned your way so far that maybe are like your top three skills as a professional?
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, this is one of the things, the tips I got over and over again as a young kid was learn how to sell, because you're going to be, no matter what your job is, what your career is, sales is a part of it. If you're a scientist, you know, trying to get grants to continue your studies, you're going to need to sell the idea of why people should give you funding. Knowing how to sell helps you in every career. And so I really focused on learning how to sell. So sales, I think, is number one for building any business or career. I think a lot of people miss out because they don't sell themselves. They don't know how to sell their projects. They don't know how to sell their work, whether you're working for a big company or running a company. If you're running a company, the founder is generally the main salesperson for 2 to 4 years, at least, if not always. So you've got to be able to sell to build a business, is in my opinion.
Is that what you put in your book? You wrote The Augmentor, right? What is now? A year ago? A bit less maybe than that?
Less than a year ago. March will be a year.
Can I remember that one time I was one of the business trip and I saw your book in one of the airports, right? And I was like, hey, I know this guy listed a lot by the name, you know, and I was like, so it was cool to see that you were distributing in also like an airport that is difficult to get in usually. So first of all, why did you write a book, especially since like, you know, digital marketing and so like it's so separate from what you do on a daily basis, so why? And also, what did it give you both mentally, right? And also in terms of business? You also do speaking events and so on. So why and how did you put it in your sort of marketing mix there?
Hey, quick break. This podcast is hosted by The Influencer Marketing Factory. We are an influencer marketing agency that helps brands and companies engage with Gen Z and millennials on social media. We take care of influencer identification, storytelling, creativity, negotiation, contracting, campaign management, ROI analysis, in-depth reporting, content boosting, and much, much more. Are you interested in learning more? You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or you can Google The Influencer Marketing Factory.
I did it because I got approached by a friend that was a ghostwriter and said, have you wanted to write a book? I've thought about it in the past. I had spoken about, obviously, our marketing methodology over and over and over again, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times for years. And so the idea of putting it in a book, like the content was done. I just had to put it into a book. So I actually was able to dictate it, have someone transcribe it, then edit it. So it was really easy to put together in that sense. And decided to go all in and really launch a successful book, put a marketing plan together and get it out there and hit the bestseller list and do all that. Now that I talk to a lot of friends that are authors, the outcome is not as impactful as you would think. Like, there's a lot of books coming out all the time. So it's really rewarding to see people buying it, tagging me in it that I don't know. I think we've sold like 30,000 copies at this point. Like, that many people are reading our methods and talking about marketing. Like, that's really cool and rewarding. And in terms of like getting phone calls, like, I read your book, I need to use you for marketing. That's a lot more limited.
Yeah, maybe it's more like, you know, for authority in the space, right? To have a name. If you want to go and speak somewhere else, you can be like, hey, I sold 30,000 copies of this book, right? It helps for your own personal branding, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I would say, like, my career isn't speaking engagements. Like, I usually don't, I do get paid to speak sometimes, but that's not like what I'm pursuing. So if that's your career, books can be really powerful.
Okay.
That won't compare to what I can make you running Hawk Media. Like, I know a lot of friends that are like really top professional speakers. And what they make in a year is nothing compared to what Hawk Media makes. Not to discredit it, it's just, it's a very individualized, not scalable career. This was more about driving Hawk Media. And what, you know, really at the end of the day, part of it is like, it gets our team all on the same page because everyone we hire reads the book. All our clients get the book. Like, part of it is like, now we all speak the same language. There's a communication thing there. There is a credibility build there. And also it's like a nice bucket list checklist. I wrote a book. I don't know that I'll do another one. It's a lot of work.
Can imagine. Well, it's done, right? Like, as you said, like, you know, okay, check it, been there, fantastic. So since you don't want to, like, you know, you don't see yourself for, like, you know, speaking opportunities in the future, But you have a lot of things going on, right? Because you have Hawk Media, then you have Hawk Ventures, so you have Hawk AI, and maybe we can talk more about that and about the future of the marketing, you know?
Sure.
So what is that thing that keep you going? Because I was listening to another podcast, and if I'm correct, many companies try to acquire your agency, and it's not just about the money, right? Because you could potentially just exit, go on a beach, and enjoy. So I guess that you love doing this, but what exactly do you love on a daily, day-to-day operation?
Learning, being outside, like learning stuff new and expanding. Like it's a combination of growth and learning. Growing the business is super important to me, and continuing to, you know, build off, beat what we did last year, be better than we were. Like that's super important to me. And then also constantly learning something new, which is what got me into venture and Hawk AI. It's like, where else can I use what I know, but expand that into something that will benefit the business, but also that I'll get to try something new and learn something new. That's where I get excited, is the new, the unknown, working through problems. That's what I love. And so I've said this on podcasts before, I think point where I'll be done with this and maybe bring on a partner or something like that will be the point where I'm like, okay, I've gotten it to where I can get it on my own. And maybe it's time, but I haven't hit that yet.
How do you manage yourself between your main role as CEO of an agency and then also your presence for the ventures? How much are you active in those? Do you mostly like give the money there, or do you are on the board and are you actively looking at that? How do you really split your time, and do you have a methodology between that in order to manage things?
Common question I get. And what's funny is it's similar to the idea of like, how do you balance work and life? It's like the idea that they are in conflict with each other would make it impossible to run. The thing about our venture fund is we're investing in all the partners we use at Hawk Media. So while I'm looking at softwares that we want to use for our clients, I'm also seeing if it's a good investment. While we're looking at, in our financing arm, while we're looking at financing companies, we're financing our own clients. Like, so Hawk Media and Hawk Capital work the same. Same thing with Hawk AI. Hawk AI is built off of the data from our clients, our partners, and sold to, we use it for all our clients, and then the broader ecosystem. And then it also feeds back into Hawk Media. So it's all working together. I'm going to spend 3 hours on this, 4 hours on this, 5 hours on this. It's everything I'm doing is helping all of them.
So that is what was like one of my questions, mostly for the end. But let's talk about it now. Since now you talk about, you know, Hawk AI. Everyone is talking about it nowadays. Every single day, I go on LinkedIn and there is someone is teaching me the best tricks for ChatGPT, or like there is anything out there. And it's interesting, right? Tomorrow is going to be expert for chat, like, you know, and all the other open AI.
Well, no, you're expert now, an AI expert.
Yeah, right, exactly. I saw a meme, it was like last year, investors in crypto, right? And then they put it something crossover and like AI expert, like we're gonna put all of that. And so I want to just quickly ask you if you are actively using any of these tools. And if you do, there is people that are saying, oh, this is it's a great revolution, it's gonna change everything. Others are like, yeah, but still, it might be something that is an addition and not necessarily like, you know, a replacement.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on this?
Over a long period of time, there will be some replacement. On a short, people forget that people are short or not quick to adapt and adopt.
Yeah.
So ChatGPT is a good example. I think there's some, like, we're using it for some really interesting, like, thought joggers. Like, let's get 10 copy ideas and then we edit it and build it out versus trying to come up with that from scratch. Problem is, over time, that'll start just, it's just regurgitating what's already on the internet. So you do need to add the personnel element to actually create anything original. There's nothing original on ChatGPT, and there never will be. That's how it's built. I think that that's it. Now the argument would be, how original are marketers? Which, again, that goes back to the why I started the company, is there weren't that great. I do think that it's a great tool right now. I think long term, it'll replace some of what agencies do, some of what marketing teams do. Like copywriters, if you're just a copywriter, you better become a really good editor. Like, but not, again, this isn't tomorrow, but 5 years from now, it might be a pretty tight market. Like because again, human adoption. Big companies are not all of a sudden just change all their copywriting over to an AI tool. It's just not what's going to happen. So why we built Hawk AI was, 8 years ago, I had a conversation of what will disrupt the agency business. And at the time, they were some very bright people saying that they thought freelancers and the gig economy is going to just completely disrupt agencies. I'm like, no way. Like, how many times have you been canceled on by an Uber driver? You want that with your email marketer or your Facebook marketer? Like, it's just, gig economy doesn't work for this if you want a stable business, which is what every founder wants at some point. Like, you can go for high growth for a while, but at some point, they're like, can this just fucking run reliably?
Yeah.
Is what people want. So that's why you want a good agency. And so I wasn't worried about that, but I was like, but AI will make a dent. And I was literally calling ChatGPT. Like, at some point, something will be savvy enough to be able to write ads in real time based on feedback. And they're like, well, why aren't you building it? I'm like, well, I'm not an AI engineer, but I do think I can build the platform that it'll need to have. And so what ChatGPT doesn't have, real-time marketing data on thousands of companies. And this is where the nuance of it becomes a problem. So Google, Facebook, Shopify, a lot of these platforms have great marketing data, but they're all biased by nature. They don't want you to be off their platform. They don't want you to be switching back and forth. So you need a third party to be showing that data and tracking that data. So we built it. And so we're pulling in all the disparate media and marketing data from about 8,000 companies in real time. So we're able to benchmark an individual company and say, hey, your click-through rates are 20% worse than everybody else. So your ad copy or creative or your targeting isn't good. You need to fix this. Because what we kept running into is people just arbitrarily saying like, oh, my Facebook ads are down 5%. Something's wrong. But what if everybody else is down 20% on Facebook? Is something wrong? Or are you actually doing really well and it's just the market? And so that's one example. Another example is if someone thinks, you know, I should be getting 10 times my money when I spend money on Google ads. That's what my friend says. This is a common thing we get. Your friend says they're getting 10 times. Okay, let's go look at the market. The average company is getting 3 times. You're getting 8. You're crushing it. Stop complaining. Focus on other things that you should be. Because what ends up happening is these people end up focusing on the wrong things and spending a ton of time and money trying to fix something that isn't broken. So that was the initial. Then we're building insights into why those things are broken. Like, why is your conversion rate low or why? And then over time, our goal is to teach AI how to make these fixes, how to advise on it, and create automated marketing strategy. And what I was waiting for was something like a ChatGPT to come out that could then digest that data and then we could partner up with, because I wasn't going to build my own AI from scratch. And now we're there. We have a few companies that are getting there. And so I think in the next year, it'll be really interesting. And we have the data. We have the insights. Now we just need to teach AI how to use it. And it could be really fun.
Absolutely interesting. And also love the Uber analogy about the gig economy. I think I'm going to start using that one, you know, when I want to say anything about, you know, that you need someone that is stable.
Yeah.
So did you ever use that analogy with any clients that were like asking that, or did you just come up with that?
I don't know what you just came up with on the spot, but in general, I'm like, the only client that thinks they want to hire freelancers instead of a stable agency or a stable partner has just never done it. Because like the amount of times a freelancer like, you know what, I'm just going to go to Bali for the month. I don't want to do your email marketing anymore. Like, good luck.
Yeah.
Enjoy running your business.
Yeah. It's the same for a lot of like, especially also like, you know, anyone that has a platform and you have developers and you don't really have a good contact with them.
Yeah.
Some of them, they might disappear from one day to the other with passwords, credentials, or even just like sometimes they don't, if they are not commenting the code because for any reason, and then someone else gets in, you have to start from scratch. So I totally get it. So AI, okay, fantastic. Something else that I also wanted to ask you. Since, you know, like we as an agency, we mostly focus on influencer marketing. That's what we do. So I wanted to ask you, what is also your take on that? In the past 10 years, influencer marketing has changed a lot. 10 years ago, certain terminology, they didn't even exist. In the past 4 years with, you know, from Musical.ly to TikTok, we saw certain things, you know, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels. There is a lot happening. Everyone is trying to get like a piece of the cake. Pricing are going up. There is much more involved in the creator economy. So what is the present and the future, in your opinion, also for everything that is influencer marketing on one side and also the creator economy, that is just a broader concept?
So influencer marketing changed a ton when the FTC started regulating it. It was the golden goose until you had to disclose that now these are sponsored. And then it became another ad channel to me. It's a good ad channel. It's just like it's micro endorsement deals. Nobody thought Michael Jordan wasn't getting paid to be on the face of Jordan. It's like It works even if you tell everyone you're getting paid. Everyone knows it's okay. So I still think it's very lucrative. The problem I've seen with the influencer space is it's not scalable. So people go to it as like, oh, if we can get this one influencer to make this ROI, then if we get 10 influencers, we'll just 10x that ROI, right? No, and you know this. It's like, it's not that predictable. So I think it's a great part of the marketing mix, but I do think at times people over-index in it. I also think a lot of people under-index in it because of the lack of tracking. People get a little too performance-driven, and since they can't track the ROI, they don't do it. That is a huge mistake in all marketing, in my opinion. Like, if you only do things you can track, you're not going to build a good brand. So I think there's a balance to it. And I think it's going at it, like trying to benefit from it in every way you can. So it's benefiting from the influencer's audience, benefiting from their content creation, benefiting from the alignment and the partnership, using their likeness in your own ads, like literally leveraging influencers in every way you can throughout your funnel so that you get the benefit of that third-party validation and that trust factor and that brand alignment. But and you're not just paying for like eyeballs, which is a lot of the mistake a lot of people make.
Totally. Yeah, no, especially influencer marketing cannot be just like ROI oriented, because of course you can track things, but how many times you see something from an influencer and maybe you're not going to buy that specific moment, right? So agree with you. Some certain people think that it's like Google Ads. You put $1 in, you get this dollar out, but it doesn't really make sense. How much are you active on social media? If I'm correct, I think that maybe a year ago or something like that, you posted a video. It went super viral on TikTok. It was about a car.
Yeah.
You know, was a new... You got like a bunch of views. Like I'm talking about how many millions of views?
I got 70 million views directly on the video, but only just shared so many times. I think it's got like 4 billion.
That's crazy. I don't think you expected that, right? But you just...
No, definitely didn't expect it. And not that great of a video.
Yeah, right. What was it? Like an expo?
You're taking a sheet off a flying car. It's the world's first flying car and they just like unveil it. That's it.
Okay. So first of all, going from the one that is usually left behind, right? Like, you know, so an agency and so on, to having a video that goes viral. What is the first thing? Like what did happen? Like, did you start receiving a bunch of notifications on your phone and was like, what the heck? Like, what is happening here? And then he started...
Yeah. So I took that. It was Art Basel a year and just about a year ago, however. And I took that video, went out for the night, went to bed, woke up, and it had like 600,000 views. When I took it, I think I had 100 TikTok followers. I wasn't a TikTok user. In fact, it was that day that my team called me and said, hey, you're launching a book in March. You should probably start using TikTok and getting your following up. So, great. I'll see what I run into in Art Basel. That's cool. Film that video.
Okay.
Post it. Go to bed. Wake up. 600,000 views on the video when I woke up. And I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. My last video had 4,000 views. So, and it was that was my most viral video ever. It was the video before. That's interesting. I go to lunch. I look back down and it was like 7 million.
Wow.
And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And that it just kept going. And like now it's like, I think it stopped at like 69.5 million or
okay.
something.
Wow. So, I mean, these people are random people. They're not only your demographics. It's not people that might need your business. Do you think that even, let's say, even maybe at 0.1%, right? Because of the mass audience that you got there, because of that, you got anything out of it, you, of course, grew your follower base and then so on. Are you using that now for work? Like, because you're at least having that type of followers? Not really.
Now, so TikTok is this is what's funny about TikTok is people go on the For You page, not the follower page. For a while, because that video like was pulling people in for weeks, a lot of my videos that I posted after that kept getting good views. Like a month and a half later, I went to the Super Bowl and I posted a video that also went a little viral. So there were like a little bit of a kick. The video is going to go viral on its own or not. It's not going to go viral because of your following. So I've had videos get like, I have 200,000 TikTok followers. I've had videos get 1,000 views.
Of course.
Kind of, honestly, the strategy of TikTok, I kind of backed off on because that doesn't help me. I'm not trying to be a celebrity. You know, that doesn't help me. I need business owners as followers, and that's not who's attracted to my viral
TikTok. You posted so many different things and not really a niche, not really a topic, right? So even the algorithm is difficult for him to understand. Or should I push this content?
If I look at my friends, aside from Gary Vaynerchuk, who already came in with a massive following, the ones that go for like the business quotes, unless you're just bragging about your Ferrari and your Rolex, you're not getting a following on TikTok. Like my friends that like post marketing tips on a daily basis, they get to like, you know, a few thousand followers, a few thousand views. Like it's not, there's just not the audience for it. And that's okay. That's the thing. I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that big audiences, everyone wants a big audience. It's like, sometimes you want the niche audience to fit your chart.
Especially in the B2B, right? It's just minor numbers. So in the last minutes that we have left, what else it is exciting you nowadays that either people are not looking at and you feel like, look at that because it's going to be the future, or anything, just something that you personally care?
Yeah, you know what I'm excited about is I think this is the first time in our history that the media has tried to project a recession. Like, oh, a recession's coming. It's coming later next year. It's from everything I see, it's not. And what's really nice is like last year was painful for most business owners. And I don't think the media put that out there much because frankly, most people don't care. Like it was a weird year because 2021 was such a skyrocketed year and business owners love to grow. Last year for most was tough. It usually doesn't last many years of tough times for business owners. And so you're seeing some layoffs right now, but I don't think there's some giant thing coming to fall. I think it's going to slow down. It's going to be weird for this quarter. And then when we start looking at year-over-year numbers, 23 to 22, which starts in Q2, and we start seeing that the world doesn't end at 5% interest and everybody's going to be okay, I think everyone's going to calm down and it's going to be actually an exciting rest of the year. And I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a huge swing because right now everyone's so scared that when people realize you don't have to be scared and it's all going to be okay, I think it's going to be a really fun
Interesting. I also look forward for that. Also our own agency and all other folks that are talking. I do agree on that. Like, you know, I can see the media sometimes exaggerating things. And if you're not that literate in what is happening, then you just follow the news. And there is this noble effect of negativity where you just, like, you know, look at things in the wrong way. And a super last thing, just to go back at the beginning, what we said, you built from scratch, from nothing to 200 people, even more, right, in your company. Great valuation of the agency. For anyone else there that is now trying to maybe bring their own company to the next level, what is the most important thing that you learned as an entrepreneur going from zero to 200 plus employees?
Yeah, I would say a couple things. One, there's no break. Running a business is a shit show and will always be a shit show. There isn't a single business out there that's not a shit show. If things are calm, something's coming. Mm-hmm. So just know what you signed up for, I think, is one of the most important things, and commit to it and know that, like, this is what you asked for. You can stop at any time, but it is never going to be stable. Just not a reality. And number two, as the founder, you're always going to be one that cares the most, and just get over it. To everyone else, it's a job, and to you, it's a life. So, and that doesn't change. And knowing that, you can act accordingly, plan accordingly, build your business accordingly. Because I think getting caught up in the fantasy of there's some finish line where you just can, everything runs itself. I hear so many people like, yeah, I just want to hire a CEO. Like, oh, you think you're going to just hire someone to run your company for you and it's all going to be good? Like, that very, 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 very,
absolutely. No, I think, and thanks for sharing that, because I can see too many videos on TikTok, YouTube shorts that they represent entrepreneurship as this nice thing that is going to be easy. It's not. So thank you for being just, like, you know, completely transparent for anyone that is aspiring to do that, because it's not that easy. Well, Eric, thank you so much. And congratulations for all your achievements. Best of luck also for the new adventures that you might have. And for just sharing more knowledge with us today. This was the Influence Factor by the Influencer Marketing Factory, and I'll see you in the next episode.